This is the sixth day of this June 2018 seven-day session. We'll take up a koan today. This is from the Mumonkan, Gateless Barrier. It's number 19, called Ordinary Mind is the Way. First, the case. Joshu asked Nansen. I'll use these are Japanese versions of the Chinese. I'll use the Chinese names because they're not that difficult to pronounce. Zhao Zhou asked Nanshuan, "What is the way?" Nanshuan answered, "Ordinary mind is the way." Zhao Zhou asked, "Shall I try to seek after it?" "If you try to seek after it, you go away from it," answered Nanshuan. Zhao Zhou, "If I do not try for it, how can I know the way?" Nanshuan, "The way is not a matter of knowing or not knowing. Knowing is illusion, not knowing is blankness. If you attain to this way of no doubt, it is as boundless as vast space, so how can there be right or wrong in the way?" And at these words, Zhao Zhou was suddenly enlightened. This is reported to be when Zhao Zhou had his first of multiple awakening experiences. We'll start though with his teacher, biographical material with his teacher, Nanshuan. He and Zhao Zhou both are squarely in the Tang dynasty, often called the Golden Age of Zen. Although some scholars argue that the one following that, the Sung dynasty, was just as great in its own way. But this Nanshuan was a disciple of Ma Zu, who was supposedly had 139 enlightened disciples. Before Nanshuan met Ma Zu, he was already widely versed in the various schools of Buddhism and had delved into the sutras of the Mahayana sutras. I'm reading here from Zen's Chinese Heritage by Andy Ferguson. It says here that at their first meeting, that is Nanshuan meeting Ma Zu, Nanshuan is said to have instantly forgot the net of delusions and delighted in samadhi. After Nanshuan received Dharma transmission from Ma Zu, he built a solitary hut on Mount Nanshuan. These masters often took their names from the mountains they lived on. And he stayed there for more than 30 years, practicing Zen in this solitary hut. Here he was obviously enlightened, a man who was not ready yet in his own mind. He was not ready to teach. So he spent 30 years there. It's hard to imagine that time scale. Someone who's already received Dharma transmission. And then a high-ranking official invited him to descend from the mountain and honored him by becoming a student. And that led to Nanshuan's reputation spreading widely, and students then were flocking to him in the hundreds to train under him. Here's one of Nanshuan's Teshos. He entered the hall and addressed the monks, and he said, Dipankara Buddha said, the arising in mind of a single thought gives birth to the myriad things. Just to comment on that, it's really affirming the non-dual nature of mind and things. Things are things because of mind. Mind is mind because of things. When we wake up in the morning, the very first thing, sometimes we can find that the mind is completely empty. We're in a state of just not knowing nothing. And then, a second later or half a second later, comes this awareness of self and things, the world. We give birth to the world every morning. And then Nanchuan's talk continues. Why is it that phenomenal existence is empty? If there is nothing within mind, then how does one explain how the myriad things arise? Isn't it as if shadowy forms differentiate emptiness? This question is like someone grasping sound and placing it in a box, or blowing into a net to fill it with air. Therefore, some old worthy said, it's not mind, it's not Buddha, it's not a thing. That was his teacher, Mazu. Thus we just teach you, brethren, to go on a journey. This is a very penetrating question. If there's nothing within mind, then how does one explain how the many things arise? He continues, it's said that bodhisattvas who have passed through the 10 stages of development and attained the Shurangama Samadhi and the profound Dharma storehouse of all Buddhas naturally realize the pervasive, wondrous liberation of Zen Samadhi. Throughout all worlds, the form body is revealed and the highest awakening is manifested. Form body. The Dharma body. The great wheel of Dharma is turned, Nirvana is entered, and limitless space can be placed in the hole on the point of a feather. Although a single phrase of sutra is recited for endless eons, its meaning is never exhausted. Its teaching transports countless billions of beings to the attainment of the unborn and enduring Dharma. And that which is called knowledge or ignorance, even in the very smallest amount, is completely contrary to the way. So difficult, so difficult. Take care. Notice this. He links knowledge and ignorance. He's not saying ignorance is completely contrary to the way. Knowledge or ignorance, either one, is completely contrary to the way, the Tao. this I'm fishing for a dialogue from Nanchuan's student, Zhao Zhou. Related to these words of Nanchuan. Or maybe it was Nanchuan himself. Get to it when we get to it. At another occasion, Nanchuan said, Master Mazu said, again he's quoting his teacher, mind is Buddha. And then Nanchuan continues, but old teacher Wang, that's himself he's referring to, doesn't talk that way. It's not mind. It's not Buddha. It's not a thing. Is there any error in speaking thus? He then bowed and went out. So each of these is a koan. These are both koans. One is Mazu's answer, mind is Buddha. The other koan is Nanchuan's answer, not mind, not Buddha, not a thing. Well, which is right? Reminds me of one of these swinging doors in a restaurant kitchen. One way says enter, the other way says exit. Here's another exchange when Zen Master Nanchuan ascended the Dharma seat in the hall. The government official who discovered him, invited him off the mountain, said, we invite the master to expound the Dharma for the sake of all beings. And Nanchuan said, what would you have me say? And the official said, can the master offer no expedient method to enter the way? Nanchuan said, what do you say is lacking? The official said, well, why are there six realms and four modes of birth? Just drawing from some doctrine he had read. Nanchuan said, I don't teach that. It's a school of direct experience, not just piling up knowledge about Buddhist doctrine. This is a famous one. I often think of it during campaign season in our elections, when the same official took his leave from Nanchuan to return to his duties as the magistrate of a local city. Nanchuan asked him, when your eminence returns to the city, how will you govern the people there? And the official said, I will use wisdom to govern them. Nanchuan said, in that case, the people there will meet with great distress. Another time, Zhao Zhou asked Nanchuan, there are no things that are outside of the way. Outside of things, there is no way. Dao. What is the Dao outside of things? Nanchuan hit him with a staff. Zhao Zhou grabbed the staff and said, "Hereafter, don't be hitting people in error." Nanxuan said, "It's easy to tell dragons from snakes. It's difficult to fool a patch-robed monk." Dragons and snakes are the enlightened and the unenlightened. But Harry says, those two he could distinguish, but it's difficult to fool a patchwork of simple monk. Here's another important one. When Nanxuan was near death, the head monk said, "Master, where will you be 100 years from now?" Nanxuan said, "I'm going to be an ox living down at the bottom of the mountain. It's going to be of service. I'm going to be, an ox is a beast of burden. I'm going to be serving others." The monk said, "May I follow you to that place as an ox?" Nanxuan said, "If you follow me, you must do so with a single blade of grass in your mouth." And then when Nanxuan was dying, he said to the monks, "The star's light is dim but eternal. Don't say that I'm coming or going." And then when he'd finished speaking, he died. And now Zhao Zhou, the famous Zhao Zhou, who's is in more koans than any other teacher. Of course, he was a disciple of Nanxuan. I already said that this exchange of today's koan was his first awakening. He was only 18 at the time. Nanxuan was much older than he was. And he spent several decades, it says, training under Nanxuan until Nanxuan died. That's when Zhao Zhou was in his late 50s. So then he set out traveling all over China to cultivate his practice further. And at the age of 80, he was finally settled down at a monastery to teach. His fame spread and eventually had 13 Dharma heirs, but his lineage died out not that long later. Of course, we know him from his response to the monk who asked, "Does a dog have Buddha nature?" You know what he said. Skipping some because we read some of these just last year. Oh, here's where Zhao Zhou says in a talk, "Buddha is affliction, affliction is Buddha." So this is the understanding, enlightened understanding that there's nothing outside our Buddha nature. Even affliction is part of our Buddha nature. And then a monk said, "I don't understand whose house is afflicted by Buddha." Zhao Zhou said, "All people are afflicted by Buddha." The monk asked, "How can affliction be avoided?" To which Zhao Zhou said, "Why avoid it?" He's not saying to resign yourself to afflict your afflictions, but there's no need to do anything with them. This is at least the purest form of Zen teaching. It's just a matter of doing the practice, and through doing the practice wholeheartedly, our afflictions gradually fall away. Never as fast as we'd like, but little by little, or sometimes in chunks. One day, Zhao Zhou was walking with an official in a park. A rabbit saw them and, becoming alarmed, ran away. The official asked Zhao Zhou, "Master, you are a great worthy. When the rabbit saw you, why did it run away?" So I guess the monk, the official, is thinking, "Oh, he's a great, great, compassionate master. Why would a rabbit be afraid of him?" Why did it run away? And Zhao Zhou said, "Because I'm good at killing." And it didn't mean killing rabbits. There's a line in verse in the Mumon Khan where it says, referring to Kyogen, it says, "He spreads poison limitlessly." I'm not going to read any more. There are so many more of Zhao Zhou, but we're running out of time. So it's just to say that he is said to have lived to be 120. And now we'll go back to the case, today's case. Zhao Zhou asked Nanxuan. So this is that initial meeting where Zhao Zhou came to enlightenment. What is the way? What is the Tao? The Tao is has been translated as both enlightenment or Bodhi, and also as the Dharma. So it's a really inclusive term. What is the way? To which Nanxuan said, "Ordinary mind is the way." Sometimes ordinary is translated as normal or usual. The root word is constant or eternal. So this is not just ordinary in the sense of banal, or it's ordinary. Ordinary mind is the way. What does he mean by that? That's one of the points of the koan. And then Zhao Zhou says, "Shall I try to seek after it?" And Nanxuan says, "If you try to seek after it, you go away from it." And then Zhao Zhou, "If I do not try for it, how can I know it? How can I know the way?" So we can imagine in contemporary terms someone asking, "Okay, what is enlightenment?" "Ordinary mind is our enlightened mind. Well, how do I get there? That would be the more common thing we'd expect. How do I get there? Well, as long as you're trying to get there, it's escaping you. There's a little story it's attributed to Zen. I don't know whether it is or not, but this is how it goes. I'm reading from Stories of the Spirit, Stories of the Heart, Parables of the Spiritual Path from Around the World. One of the devotees in the temple, that suggests it wasn't Zen, the word devotee, one of the devotees in the temple was well known for his zealousness and effort. Day and night he would sit in meditation, not stopping even to eat or sleep. As time passed, he grew thinner and more exhausted. The master of the temple advised him to slow down, to take better care of himself. But the devotee refused to heed his advice. So one day the master asked him, "Why are you rushing so much? What is your hurry?" "I'm after enlightenment," replied the student. "There's no time to waste." To which the master said, "And how do you know that enlightenment is running on before you so that you have to rush after it? Perhaps it's behind you, and all you need to encounter it is to stand still. But you're running away from it." Well, I think a lot of people hear that and say, yeah, I know that. But wait, if you know it, why are you grasping for awakening? Why are you so caught up in the thought of awakening? Yes, we aspire to realize our true nature, to realize our true nature for the sake of all beings. This is nothing to apologize for. It's nothing higher, nothing more wonderful that we could possibly attain in our lives. But so long as we're grasping at it, that's the key thing. As long as we're trying to get it for ourselves, which is how most people relate to it, trying to get it. Roshi Kapila said that when he went to Japan, he just wanted to grab Kensho and run. Wasn't that easy. As long as he was trying to grab it. But then Zhao Zhou counters, "Well, if I don't try for it, how can I know it? Or how can I realize the way?" But it's the words here are knowing it, at which Nanchuan said, "The way is not a matter of knowing or not knowing. Knowing is an illusion. Not knowing is blankness. If you attain to this way, this Tao of no doubt, it is as boundless as vast space. So how can there be right or wrong in the way?" And those words are what brought Zhao Zhou to awakening. Let's go back. He says, "The way is not a matter of knowing or not knowing. Knowing is illusion." That is, this kind of dualistic knowing of I know something about something. And not knowing, in the conventional sense of not knowing, is just blankness. How can there be right or wrong in the way? As far as knowing, E.O. Wilson made the point, We are drowning in information while starving for wisdom. Very Zen-like point. And T.S. Eliot, about right and wrong, makes me think of this young Zhao Zhou who's flailing. Eliot said, from wrong to wrong, the exasperated spirit proceeds unless restored by that refining fire wherein you must move in measure like a dancer. You know, it's not often easy to appreciate what it is about a dialogue like this that would trigger awakening in the student. But of course, it's not the words. It's not the words we're reading on the page. It's everything. Also nonverbal that was happening there between the two of them, starting with Zhao Zhou's readiness. His mind was wide open. It must have been wide open, clear. And just the rapport that they had, Zhao Zhou and Nanxuan. Timing. But we can't concern ourselves when we're working on first koan or any practice, we can't concern ourselves with things like the thoughts of timing or anything else, or even our own readiness. We have one thing to do, that is to lose ourselves completely in the practice we're working on. It's that simple, uncomplicated, just that. Any calculating, any speculating we do leaves us 1,000 miles from this true nature. We have to give up all of that. Give up standing back, mentally standing back and examining the process of practice. Just ride it. Be it. Be the mu. Be the breath. It's difficult to do this 100% by the last day or two of Sesshin. Many people are doing it about 90%, 85%, 95%. To do it 100%, though, is what is needed, so that there is no trace of thought in the mind. That is, no trace of trafficking in thoughts. Thoughts, little thoughts, will always be floating through the mind, but there's no involvement, no engaging the thoughts. And so the mind is not marred by thought or concepts about attainment. This Zhao Zhou at this time must have been poor in the sense of the Christians, Meister Eckhart said, and I say to you by the eternal truth, that as long as you desire to fulfill the will of God and have any desire after eternity and God, so long are ye not truly poor. He alone hath true spiritual poverty who wills nothing, knows nothing, desires nothing. The Zen fool. Troubled by the illusion of knowledge. Moving on to the commentary. Mumon, the compiler of this collection, the Mumon Khan, he says in his commentary, questioned by Zhao Zhou, Nanchuan, like melting ice, questioned by Zhao Zhou, Nansen, like melting ice and disintegrating tile, dissolved and could not offer a plausible explanation. Even though Zhao Zhou has come to a realization, he must delve into it for another 30 years before he can understand it fully. There's that 30 years that he spent in a solitary hut on the mountains. He wasn't just hanging out there. He was continuing his post-Kensho training or practice. Cleansing. This has to be backwards, this commentary. It should be questioned by Nanchuan, Zhao Zhou, like melting ice and disintegrating tile, dissolved. Or maybe not. Could see it the other way. And then the verse, Muon's verse. Hundreds of flowers in spring, the moon in autumn, a cool breeze in summer and snow in winter. If your mind is not clouded with unnecessary things, no season is too much for you. Zen Master Yunmen, Umon, put it this way, every day is a good day. Every day is a good day, if what? That's the point of this. If your mind is not clouded with unnecessary things. Then we really see the flowers that have always been there. We smell them. We see the moon as never before. We feel that cool breeze in summer. We marvel at snow in winter. Somewhere someone said, talked about the rare person who can look at flowers without wishing they were more colorful, and who can look at the moon without wishing it were brighter. Beyond likes and dislikes, beyond preferences, is someone of real spiritual poverty. Our time is up. We'll stop and recite the four vows. All beings without number,
I bow to the great endless divine passions. I bow to the brute dharma gates beyond measure. I bow to penetrate the great way of Buddha. I bow attain all beings without number. I bow to liberate endless blind mountains. I bow to uproot dharma gates beyond measure. I bow to penetrate the great way of Buddha. I bow to attain all beings without number. I bow to liberate endless blind passions. I bow to uproot dharma gates beyond measure. I bow to penetrate the great way of Buddha. I bow to attain.